This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Governor Jim Justice called legislators back into session this week to fix laws passed during the regular legislative session. But addressing flaws in the state's medical cannabis program wasn't on the special call. As Dave Mistich reports, Democrats are working outside the regular lawmaking process to fix the law anyway.
As lawmakers trickled out of Charleston on Monday and Tuesday, the three-day stint of interim committee meetings and a two-day special session was remarkable for what wasn't on the agenda as much as what was. On Sunday, as the House of Delegates gaveled in to introduce bills on the governor's call, there was one measure that wasn't officially listed on the special session.
House Bill 109, West Virginia Medical Cannabis Banking Act.
To the members, this bill has been introduced, and it's been the practice of the House that when we are in special session, the governor's call controls what is taken up by this House.
The bill would have created a banking system for the state's medical cannabis program. Despite a failed motion to bring the bill to the floor and House Speaker Tim Armstead's triple committee reference, lawmakers in favor of the issue haven't stopped. Democrats in the House and Senate began circulating a petition to force themselves to act. Article 6, Section 19 of the state constitution allows legislators to gather 3/5 of the members of each body to call themselves into session. Senator Mike Romano of Harrison County gathered signatures in the upper chamber.
You know, everybody seemed to be happy to sign it. Obviously, you can't do it with 12 Democrats, although all 12 Democrats signed, and we had 9 additional Republicans. I'm sure there would have been others that would have been interested in signing it, but quite frankly, you know, when I got to 21, which was the magic number for 60%, I didn't go any further.
Romano points to Governor Justice's earlier position on the issue as a motivation for gathering the signatures.
We're not out to compel the governor to do something. The governor has always been supportive of the effort to have our doctors to be able to prescribe medical cannabis when it's appropriate.
And Romano is correct. Following the 2017 legislative session, Governor Justice signed Senate Bill 386 into law. Here's Justice at the bill signing ceremony back in April 2017.
And we're here today to show basic compassion for those that our doctors are telling us this is a pathway to help those people. I mean, how could you turn your back on that? How could you turn your back on a loved one that was really suffering?
But issues, particularly related to creating a banking system for the industry that gels with federal law, stands in the way of the state's medical cannabis program being fully implemented. Although Senate President Mitch Carmichael says he supports medical use of cannabis, he didn't sign the petition that circulated within his chamber. Citing federal law, Carmichael called the petition useless.
There's an effort to try to obscure federal law as it relates to taking deposits and the money associated with these products. And there's just very little that we can do. In fact, there's nothing we can do until we get some consent from the federal government. What other states have done that are doing this is their banks are just accepting the deposits. Some of those banks are just doing it. Others are building buildings to house the money because they know it's federally illegal.
So far, more than 24 states in the District of Columbia have legalized cannabis for medical or recreational use. However, as lawmakers build a medical cannabis program in West Virginia, U.S. Attorney Mike Stewart has been a vocal opponent of the efforts to circumvent federal banking law. Stewart cites the Rohrabacher-Farr budget amendment passed by Congress, which prevents the federal government from interfering in states' implementation of medical cannabis laws. On March 23rd of this year, the amendment was renewed as part of an omnibus spending bill in effect through September 30th. But Stewart says implementation is the key word.
And so Department of Justice has agreed U.S. attorneys won't interfere in any state's implementation of medical marijuana regimes. It says nothing about enforcement of federal law after implementation.
But after putting the system in place, Stewart says there are other things West Virginia needs to consider.
Issue two becomes banking. How do you use a federal system of banking where you have interstate commerce, you have federal wires, you have United States mail, and on and on and on, federal depository insurance, the Federal Reserve, and you have a federal system effectively on a banking system. And although there's a system for medical marijuana as a state would pass, there's still federal law implicated in terms of money laundering requirements that certain reports and regulatory requirements are met.
Stewart's viewpoint seems to be having some effect on legislative leaders. Senate President Carmichael and House Speaker Armstead say they haven't seen any proposed solution that satisfactorily deals with the federal banking issues, for example. But others remain undeterred. With the Senate having the needed number of signatures to move forward, the legislature's next steps, if any, fall in the hands of the House. Delegate Mike Pushkin, a Democrat who sponsored House Bill 109 in the special session, maintains that historically there has been support to bring this issue into play.
We might have the numbers. I mean, it depends on what happens in the next few weeks. Okay. Now remember that the original bill back in 2017 passed with 76 votes in the House. Last year we had a bill that it addressed several of the issues, and it addressed the financial issue, and it passed with 78 votes. So I believe there is support in the House.
House Democrats said Wednesday they've collected 36 signatures so far. That means they need 24 more to bring the legislature back into session. Requests for comment from the governor's office on the issue of medical cannabis went unanswered Wednesday. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
Addiction specialists say recovery is not the same for any two people. And organizations around the Ohio Valley, which has the nation's highest rates of addiction, are trying to offer a range of programs to meet the needs. Erin Payne reports one such program tries to tap into a person's green thumb.
Meredith Jensen is doing some gardening on a sunny day in a secluded part of Athens, Ohio.
I'm working on our pollinator garden beds, which are a bunch of fun flowers that'll help attract butterflies, bumblebees,
Her partner Jamie Batit is filling the other beds to get them ready.
So we've got horse and goat compost here that's packed full of nutrients.
Jensen and Batit are the executive director and community outreach director, respectively, for the Chrysalis Garden, a 12 raised bed therapy garden at the new Serenity Grove Women's Recovery House. Jensen says they, like other organizations battling the addiction crisis in the Ohio Valley region, are experimenting with horticultural therapy as a way to help people battling a substance use disorder on the path of recovery.
At the same time as you're growing as a person, you can physically grow food that, one, nourishes your body, but also nourishes your soul.
Jensen started the Chrysalis Farm Organization to build community gardens in the area. After talking to members of the recovery community, it made sense for Chrysalis Garden at Serenity Grove to be the first project. Other addiction treatment and recovery organizations around the Ohio Valley region have bought into the idea. The Hope Center in Lexington is just one program in Kentucky that has a therapy garden, and Batiste says the Grow Huntington Project in West Virginia, run by Jeannie Harrison, was one they looked into when developing their project.
And that just really catapulted us to start moving forward. And what her model was is kind of where we would like to take some things eventually.
He says most of the research for the therapy garden model has come from decades of practice in Europe. A 2011 study conducted in Sweden showed evidence that gardening helped participants manage a variety of physical and mental conditions. A 2014 study across Scandinavia followed up to suggest that gardening could help participants manage mental disorders that often accompany substance use disorders, such as anxiety and depression. Janalee Stock, a former nurse and a member of the Women for Recovery Board that operates Serenity Grove, says they are excited for their residents to add another program to their holistic approach to recovery.
We're not just physical beings. We're mental, emotional, spiritual, social. Doing something like the gardening addresses some of those other aspects of recovery and taking care of yourself.
The Chrysalis Garden has plans to expand the project to include an area for meditation and a program for residents to gain business experience by selling the produce they grow to local vendors. But for now, Jensen says they're just ready to see what the residents grow.
What we call produce with a purpose. Produce because it's vegetables, but it's also you're producing something that has purpose.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Erin Payne in Athens, Ohio.
Nancy Abrams is the author of a new memoir, The Climb from Salt Lick, published by WVU Press. The book is about her experience as a young photojournalist from the Midwest moving to Preston County to live and work. Abrams documents how she came to love West Virginia and the people who live here. Carol Lofton spoke with Abrams about the new book and what it means to write honestly about one's own life.
You begin the book in the early 1970s when you came to West Virginia as an intern at a small town newspaper in Preston County, at which point you fell in love with West Virginia and ended up returning after you graduated from college. What was the draw for you?
Well, I saw the opportunity to do work that was meaningful and still have time to have a family. To combine work and a private life was really always my ultimate goal.
I want to talk a little bit about that because throughout your book, you kind of infer and talk directly about being a feminist and kind of feminist ideas throughout the book, and that a work-life balance was really important to you and you didn't want to work for a big newspaper in Miami, for instance. For you, how did working for a small town newspaper afford you that potential, and do you feel like you achieved that goal?
Well, yes, I do think I achieved that goal. But what's important is I'm a control freak. And when you're put in a box as a photographer or a writer or an editor or the designer, especially in print, the package is really important. So to me, to come to Preston County and be able to take the pictures and write the story and lay out the finished product to see it was really important to me. In most big newspapers, you have to fit into a small compartment. At a weekly newspaper, you have to do every job. And at the Preston County News, it included inserting Murphy Mart flyers and folding them up and stamping addresses on them, then dragging the newspapers to the post office. Now, that's not so glamorous. And that first summer, I even pasted up ads. But that combination of skills to make that whole package, the words and pictures and the design, was really important to me. And the Preston County News gave me the opportunity to do that.
Part of the elements of working for a small town newspaper are being deeply embedded in the community. But you talk at several places, especially when you were first entering the community, of when you first came into Preston County, you stopped at a diner and everyone stared at you because you were the stranger. And then when you were writing your farewell column to the newspaper as an intern, that you had thought that West Virginia would be full of hillbillies and moonshine and people who would as soon shoot to me as talk to me, and that wasn't true. But then later you talk about the fact that there is some that other people kind of experience an outsider-insider perspective. Was it difficult for you to break into the community? And do you feel like being a sort of outsider who was committed to the community made your work more difficult or easier?
Well, I think there's a process of becoming part of the community. For newcomers to West Virginia, I usually tell them it will take 2 years for you to find your circle, to find your tribe. And you have to prove over and over again that you're here for the long haul. You're not here to take the riches and run, which is the history of this state. I think my commitment to education, I volunteered at the local high school teaching journalism. I took classes, kayaking classes, and activities with people in the community. I do think my softball team had a whole lot to do with welcoming to the community, because when you're a part of a team, you put on a uniform. But it wouldn't have worked if I hadn't been honest, if I hadn't had good intentions. Be nice, be kind, be generous, be honest. And those are instructions for anywhere you're going to live.
Throughout the book, you are rather honest and open about a number of things, including, various sexual exploits and use of pot as a young woman. Why did you decide to include those elements in your book?
Well, I'm crazy. It's part of my commitment to honesty. One of my fears with this book was that people would read it and not be my friend anymore. I have different circles of friends, and I thought some of them would be shocked. But it didn't make sense without that. It is putting myself out there, and it's embarrassing. And I've had a couple of instances where people have stood up in a room when I walked in and said, "I can't believe you wrote about your husband's penis." And you know, I'm blushing right now to even talk about that. But a good friend of mine said, don't leave out the naughty bits. And I think that's good advice. Again, honesty, 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 honesty. It's really important, especially in these times.
Again, that's Nancy Abrams, author of a new memoir, The Climb from Salt Lick, published by WVU Press. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.